When I was in high school, I really wanted God to give me some sort of an indication where my compass needle was pointing, and I spent a lot of time frustrated that I didn't hear from God. Education was an interest, but so was doing overseas work. But the education part, I even really seriously thought of not going to college, which was hard for my parents, who were both educators, and my father, a chemistry professor at Bluffton College. But I did go to college. On SST, I went to Haiti because I was interested in that overseas experience, and I got important tools for language acquisition and cross-cultural survival. I ended up being very thankful for the experience, but I concluded that I had learned I never wanted to live and work in a developing country again. My call was certainly not in that direction. That made it easier back at Goshen to decide on a major in chemistry, pursuing a PhD in biochemistry, and going to graduate school at Michigan State University. But in Michigan State, that compass again took a 180-degree turn after I went to Nicaragua for a 2-week delegation with a group called Witness for Peace, where I received my most compelling call ever. And to explain why, I realized this morning looking in the news at the pictures of people in Ukraine, those jarring images of people carrying AK-47 rifles, women, older men, boys, and the journalists asked them, "Why are you doing this?" And, "I have to defend my home." And so I think of their vocation, that they're feeling that they have this call, but on the other side of it, there is no deep joy. It is just deep dread. But it is a call that they feel. And they shouldn't be in that position of having to make that choice. Why? Because of people with bigger guns who are sent there and have put them in that position. Those of you who are old enough will remember in the 1980s, a CIA-backed guerrilla movement created by President Reagan to reinstall a pro-US government that the Nicaraguans had just kicked out in a popular insurrection. Witness for Peace, the group that I went to Nicaragua with, was doing a nonviolent experiment to be, by living with those Nicaraguans under attack, try being human shields, but to be witnesses to what was going on and to come back and tell the people in the United States that we should not be supporting terrorism. Just as we're instinctively cheering ordinary Russians out on the street for allying themselves with the ordinary Ukrainians and demanding their country stop, so too, from Nicaragua, those images made it obvious what US citizens should be doing. And by the way, the lab work was not going well. So I felt this very clear call to go back to Nicaragua, and I decided to drop out of the PhD program. And about this time, I'm expecting that obscene phone to ring, and someone to bring it up here, and my parents may be up there telling me, "We told you not to drop out of graduate school, see?" But we compromised. I stayed in graduate school, but switched to the master's program so that I could finish in 6 months and go back to Nicaragua, a country I had only been in for 12 days and where I didn't speak a lick of the language. But the call could not be ignored. I belonged there. Did I discern right? Well, I didn't go back in 6 months. I searched for 2 years for an organization to go back with, and nothing came up. In the meantime, I stayed at the lab bench. Results followed, and I sort of, by accident, finished the PhD work. And so they gave me the degree, and then I found a job with Witness for Peace. They said that I could work in Nicaragua if I would agree to spend 4 months in language school and learn Spanish before beginning work in Nicaragua. So I remember there was a Saturday, I finished my last draft of the dissertation, went to the post office, mailed it, and Sunday my parents took me to the airport and I flew to Central America. Those next 3 years were the clearest sense of being on the correct mission that I have experienced in my life. The work entailed human rights documentation of terrorist activities by the pro-US Contra guerrillas, sharing those reports with the press corps in Nicaragua and Congress, and leading delegations of other people coming to Nicaragua for 2 weeks, as I had done. Were we successful? The US never invaded Nicaragua. We're seeing Putin's obsession with invading Ukraine. The last decade, we saw the Bush-Cheney obsession with invading Iraq. Those who were old enough in the 1980s remember Reagan's 8-year obsession with invading Nicaragua, but he never did. Witness for Peace and many other similar organizations brought over 100,000 US citizens to see with their own eyes the people carrying AK-47s who didn't want to, but had to defend their homes. It's not a coincidence that 100,000 people in the United States signed what was called the Pledge of Resistance, which was a pledge that if the United States invaded Nicaragua, they would be out there demonstrating, and 20,000 people pledged that all over the country they would do civil disobedience and be arrested at courthouses and other federal buildings. And that was on day one. Day two, it would grow, and day three, and the Reagan administration never invaded Nicaragua. The perfect fit that I experienced in that work begged the question, what on earth was that whole PhD in biochemistry thing about? From the quote, the place God calls you to is the place where your deep passion and the world's hunger meet. That time remains as the pinnacle. No other time where the work felt so right, so important. But I changed a word in that quote, and maybe you caught it. I didn't say your deep gladness. I said your deep passion. Because working in war zones isn't deep gladness. Interviewing the victims, writing their testimonies, editing them, sharing them with journalists, arranging visits from people stateside to come, meet the victims, and asking those victims to retell those stories again. A friend in Witness for Peace said, it's like watching someone with barbed wire down their throat and telling them that they need to pull it back up again and tell it. Daily encounters with the trauma of others is not gladness. So perhaps I shouldn't have been surprised that the compass needle would again take a different direction and there would be a very different call. Our stateside office told us, those of us in Nicaragua, that we needed to be aware of a term that was beginning to be used more by psychologists called PTSD. The war ended. I married Maria, a Nicaraguan. Next year, baby Jessica arrived. It was time for a change. And I got a phone call from my dad. In his lab, someone who was going to do a postdoc had suddenly dropped out, and he needed someone with experience in biochemistry, a PhD, specializing in enzymology, and that's what I had done. So it seemed like, okay, that's where the compass is pointing. That's what I'll do. I guess maybe that biochemistry PhD was not a mistake. We went back to the US, but Maria and I still both felt a call to be in Nicaragua. But there was this education too. I was now a college professor, and that's the way I wanted to contribute to Nicaragua. But as I searched, it was clear that the type of institution where I could work did not exist. What I didn't know is at that same time, the University of Mobile, Alabama, was looking for a chemistry professor with a PhD to work at a new campus that they were starting in Nicaragua, hopefully from someone who had lived there and was familiar with Nicaragua. And so when I became aware of that, it was clear, and that was where I spent the next 10 years of my life. Although each of these flip-flops in the compass were bewildering and events didn't unfold on my calendar, in retrospect, everything had a purpose. The twin callings that I heard in high school, what I learned on Haiti SST, the call in graduate school, But the fact that I couldn't go right away and I was forced to stay and finish the PhD. Since then, the work has combined both work overseas with education and chemistry in ways that I couldn't have imagined in graduate school, much less in college. And it would have been unthinkable to have tried to understand it as a high school student when I was first asking the questions and really frustrated about God not showing me a map of my whole life.
Ephesians 4, 1 through 6. I, therefore, the prisoner in the Lord, beg you to lead a life worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humanity and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, making every effort to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to the hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all, through all, and in all.
As is fitting for Carnival Sunday, I had printer trouble this morning. My career path began, as many 14-year-olds did in southwestern Minnesota, working in the heat of the summer in a dusty field rock picking. If you don't know what that is, you can ask me after the service. From there, I went on to fast food, then cleaning in a furniture factory before heading off to college to begin my real calling. I earned a bachelor's degree in youth ministry from Tabor College and went to utilize my knowledge at Grace Children's Home, a group home for youth struggling with behavioral and mental health issues in Henderson, Nebraska. And there I received a healthy dose of reality to temper my idealistic Mennonite Messiah complex. As it was clear that I needed more education, I went to seminary at AMBS and earned an MDiv in youth ministry again, and then experienced a mental emotional breakdown, or spiritual awakening, as Brené Brown calls it. So my career path took a slight deviation toward social work, and I once again sought education, along with working at Oak Lawn in their residential youth facility. I earned my master's in social work and quickly began work as a substance abuse therapist at Basher Children's Home. After a year and a half of trying my best and feeling like I failed over and over again, I had to admit that I was having yet another spiritual awakening, and I resigned. That's how you say quit when you're a professional. With zero plans of where to go from there. So that's how I ended up fulfilling my true calling as grocery manager at Maple City Market, a food co-op. Wait, what? Well, that was unexpected. How did that happen? I mean, the career aptitude test I took in high school clearly stated that I was best suited for a career in a helping profession. You know, clergy, therapist. I was supposed to help people with spiritual, emotional, and mental health issues, not to help people find nutritional yeast. I had once dreamed of converting Saddam Hussein from his life of evil. Now I'm converting UPCs. Wasn't this supposed to be the other way around? Shouldn't I have started in grocery and then eventually heard a call to ministry or social work? Okay, so I skipped a little too far ahead in the story. After my second spiritual awakening at Basher that led to my resignation, I took some time off from social work, and I needed to make money somehow. I had been a member of the co-op where I stopped in on occasion for tiramisu, And I just so happened to notice they were hiring. So I applied. Working as a clerk was a great temporary position until I was ready to get back to my real career. It was work that I enjoyed. Sure, there were some frustrations, but at the end of the day, I could see tangible results from my efforts, and I enjoyed getting to know our regular customers, which many of you are. I knew the job was temporary, and I regularly talked about getting back into my passion of social work. It just so happened that the internship supervisor for my social work degree stopped in one day and told me that there was a part-time position open in their child and adolescent outpatient department. Cool. I could ease my way back into social work while still having the healing power of the co-op. It seemed like a win-win scenario. So it was strange when something felt off about the situation. I was a very competent therapist, and I didn't not like the work. But every time I worked at the co-op, it felt right. I felt right. As a therapist, I felt like I had to contain certain aspects of myself. And I couldn't help taking my work home with me, emotionally and mentally. I was constantly thinking through strategies to get through to my clients, and I never figured out how to release that responsibility outside of work. At the co-op, it was a different story. I fairly regularly would be singing and dancing in the aisles as I did my work. I felt free to be all of me and didn't have to worry about taking the work home with me. When two of the store's managers left, my immediate thought was, if I was still at the co-op full time, I would totally apply for one of those positions. Hold on, that is not my calling. I mean, how many times had I discussed the experiences that led me to ministry or social work? And my gifts for both careers had been affirmed time and time again. Why would I leave that behind to work at a grocery store? Surely I was meant for a higher calling. Huh. A higher calling. What does that mean? And who decides whether a calling is more or less important than any other? And why is calling so often identified as one's work or career? Certainly there are callings that don't involve making a living. Some people are called to be life partners, and some to be parents. Some people are called to lives of simplicity and volunteerism or activism. Those are certainly worthy callings. What about normalcy? What if someone's calling is simply to live a normal, ordinary life? Would we consider that a worthy calling? And how does one determine whether they are fulfilling their calling or not? I mean, certainly there are people in positions of power that we would like to say are not called to that. But other than as voters, who are we to say? Are certain people really called to exploit workers and make billions of dollars to fly themselves to space? I have a hard time believing that they are. Did Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, George Floyd, and the countless other victims of police violence fulfill their callings? Can't imagine they did. Oh man, this is making my head hurt. There is certainly a part of me that wonders if I made the right decision. My student loans would tell me I did not. And there is this age-old voice that tells me I should do more, whatever that means. But I've been learning to trust my gut more rather than just my head. My gut tells me that I'm not just competent at my work, but I'm great at it. I moved into the position of grocery manager right before the pandemic hit Elkhart County. There is no better indicator of calling than loving a new job when immediately faced with supply chain issues and constant adjustments to the work. Okay, so maybe this is my calling, but it's not my entire calling. All of us are more than just our employment. I can't say I know all of my calling. Most of the time I'm feeling my way along. I know I'm called to be a positive adult in the lives of two neighbor boys. I know I'm meant to be a good human companion and caretaker for my dog. I know I am the biggest supporter of my friends and family. And I know I will do my best to stand for what is right and just in this painfully beautiful world we live in. Will I ever go back to social work or pursue a pastorate? I can't say no, and I can't say yes. I hope it's clear by now that I don't have the answer for what it means to be called. In fact, most of what I have to offer are more questions. But that's what we do here at Assembly, ask questions. So you're welcome.
When I was asked to talk about my calling, my mind went immediately to vocation. So that is largely, though not entirely, what I'll be talking about in my story. As a young child, I can only imagine that I was quite annoying to take to the zoo, especially if there were other young children under the charge of the chaperone. It must have been a difficult outing to manage. If young Naomi encountered an animal she found interesting, which was most animals, she tended to park herself there for at least 5 minutes. Anyone who has taken young children to the zoo know that this is unusual behavior. At least with my children, it goes something like, cool, a tiger, wow, a rhinoceros. Look, that man is selling ice cream. I'm really hungry, I need ice cream. So I can only imagine the difficulty of having one of the children still sitting back a few hundred yards contemplating the sleeping tiger. And if a zookeeper walked into the enclosure, well, then forget it. 5 minutes turned into as long as it took the keeper to clean up every single piece of elephant dung they could find. Then, and only then, was little Naomi willing to walk away. So nobody was surprised when I ended up spending 6 or 7 years volunteering, interning, and eventually working as an animal care specialist in the marine mammal department of the Shedd Aquarium. I had worked a variety of jobs before that: environmental educator for the Peace Corps in Nicaragua, managing a women's homeless shelter in Kansas City, working the front desk of a counseling center in Chicago, but none of them did I throw myself into the way I did at Shedd. Of course, working for Shedd wasn't all roses and rainbows. Ask my parents. They witnessed me at my unhealthiest during that season. I was physically ill more often than not. In and out of 50 degree water all day, working both day and night shifts within the same week for weeks on end until the baby sea otter was weaned of the bottle. Being called in at 2 a.m. as a standby diver during a beluga whale birth that was breech and therefore had absolutely zero chance of getting to the surface in time to take that critical first breath without a diver's help. But the birth took so long that I ended up staying when my 7:30 a.m. shift started and still couldn't go home at 4:30 because, well, thank God, the baby was able to take that first breath in time, but still hadn't eaten. And the interns designated to the overnight observation shift needed to be trained on how to put the minute-by-minute observations into the tablet. So, Naomi, make sure they know exactly what they're doing before you go home. We cannot miss recording the exact time that first feeding happens. It was an exciting job. I felt important, but I also felt completely worn out. So I suppose it also wasn't too surprising when I told Oscar, in the midst of all the crazy paperwork to change his student visa into a green card as quickly as possible after our marriage, that yes, he could do a nationwide search for a job, and that yes, I would leave Shedd and follow him. When I told Oscar this, I fully intended to continue my career in animal training. I didn't anticipate that I would end up living in what felt like a zoo and aquarium desert. Admittedly, I could have decided to drive all the way to South Bend or Fort Wayne every day. There are zoos there. But I also had made, or I also had in the back of my head, a promise I made to myself that I didn't know how to keep if I were to pursue that choice. To explain the promise, we have to go back in time, back to my time in the Peace Corps, and I promise to make this brief. I was stationed in one of the most rural outposts per my request, and it was small. Everyone knew everyone else, and of course, exactly what everyone else was doing. By the time I walked back from the school to my host family's home, my host mom often already knew what lesson I had taught that morning. This community was also ravaged by a civil war, poverty, and climate change. There were very few resources to go around. All of this was painful to witness, but what was most painful for me to see was the response of the residents. Instead of helping each other out, organizing to ask their government for help, or sharing any extras they might have with a neighbor, they actively worked to take for their families what little was available, often at the cost of a neighboring family. There were deep feuds between some of the longest standing families in town. After witnessing all of it, I felt completely overwhelmed and unable to help improve the situation. And the only thing I could think to do was to make a promise to myself, a promise I intend to keep to this day. No matter where I live, I will help and I will give back in any way I can, big or small, for the betterment of my community and neighbors, human and otherwise. So going back to my recent move to Goshen, in which I knew that Oscar and I would be trying to start a family, I simply could not justify pursuing a job that would take me out of my community and away from my family for 45 to 50 hours per week, knowing that the schedule would be demanding and inflexible and sometimes require me to be apart from what I hoped would eventually be my baby for as long as a full 24 hours at a time. I couldn't justify it. I quickly became pregnant, and with the birth came the typical hormone imbalances and anxiety of a new mother. But along with it came the realization that I was watching the career I had worked so hard to establish, the career that I had unconsciously allowed to define who I was, slip slowly away. I still dreamed of maybe getting a job at one of the closest zoos, but when I tried to work it out in reality, I still couldn't justify it. It was a rough few years of motherhood as I wrapped my mind around the loss. Fortunately, I've worked two jobs here in Goshen that I've enjoyed, interpreting at Goshen Hospital and working in the assembly office. Both helped me connect to a community that I have come to truly love. The assembly job especially was really good for my ego. You guys really like me. The job at assembly grew. And then the pandemic hit. Full-time childcare was taken away from me, and come summer, I realized it might not come back anytime soon. Several signs from myself and my children became glaringly obvious that I was not doing well. I was not able to be both the administrator and the mother that I wanted to be during this pandemic. I needed to pull back the energy I was giving outside of my house and direct it back at my family. And even more importantly, back at myself. Something I had never intentionally done before. It was the first time I've ever quit a job without a plan. Even when I left Shed, though I did not have a job lined up, I did have the intention to find a way to continue training animals. But now, here I was quitting a job, and when asked, well, what's your plan? I didn't have an answer. I had no roadmap for this. My mother, my aunts, all the women role models in my life were steeped in their careers in their 30s. I truly felt lost, but I also felt broken. And so I figured, well, I just need to be okay with not having an answer when people ask me what's next. I'm just here now, trying to figure out how to take care of my family and be a loving presence with them. In the midst of this past year or so, in which I'm working hard to stay present, I have recognized some things that bring me joy. One of those things is gardening. I love getting my hands in the dirt, and I find equal pleasure in growing food and in planting native grasses, flowers, shrubs, and trees around our 1 acre of mostly mowed grass. My heart nearly bursts when I have time to sit and watch the most beautiful insects I didn't even know existed go after my goldenrod flowers. or watch a local pair of bluebirds raise the first successful brood of babies in the birdhouse my husband and daughter painted with the craziest colors. So my calling? I simply can't define it if paired with vocation at this time in my life. When I look back on my wide assortment of experiences and jobs and think about when I felt joy in them, I realize that in every single one, without exception, I feel joy when I feel a connection. I stared at a sleeping tiger and felt a connection. I watched a zookeeper interact with an animal and was fascinated by the connection. I watched telenovelas with my host mom every night for 2 years and felt a connection. I listened to a homeless woman's story and felt a connection. I walked into a penguin enclosure at 8 a.m. shouting, "Good morning," and was showered with an almost deafening response from 35 birds and felt a connection. I received a phone call and heard Johanna Sutter's voice on the other end and immediately realized that I had forgotten to, for the third week in a row, to put the list of children's birthdays in her mailbox. And heard the patience and grace in her voice and felt a connection. I looked at a phenomenally beautiful iridescent wasp feeding from a flower that was not there until I put it in the ground only months before, and I feel a connection. I receive a wordless hug from my husband or a bright mommy when I open the door for my daughter who just got off the bus, and I feel a connection. I don't know if I'll even have a career again or what it might be, but I can assure you without a shadow of a doubt that any future career or job that I take on will offer me even more opportunities to connect. It is my calling. Connection is my calling.